Anyone who comes into the room while we're sitting would see people sitting like dolls, super quiet, not moving. And in the room you can hear a pin drop and would think, wow, this is an island of quietness. Except, if you look inside, you'd think, my God, this is noisy, busy, like the high street of London, or Rehov Dizengoff is going through my mind right now. There's so many voices. And each voice brings others. There is a very nice word in the tradition called papancha. And papancha, in English you'd say proliferation, meaning everything invites more of itself. And every thought invites its brother and its uncle and its aunt and its grandchild and its neighbor. And we feel there's a cacophonia going on, cacophony. And we have to ask ourselves, what are the voices that we really listen to? And this is a more important issue. It's not just noise. The voices have weight and power. And which are the voices that we listen to? They're not only voices in the mind, they're voices in the body, they're voices of the heart, they're voices of our history, of our biography, they're voices of all the people that have talked to us in our life, they're voices of our parents, of our society, of our teachers. All those voices are being repeated, and we own them, we think they're mine, but they're all the voices that they've come in to us all our life. And what are the strongest voices? They're very often the voices of anxiety or concern. Even if we don't recognize them as fear or concern, even very delicate voice like, what am I going to do when I leave the retreat? It's already a sense of what? My year has. What will be then? It's already very delicately concern, a daga, a concern, very light. What will I do then? What shall I do now? Where shall I go? All these voices are carrying messages and feelings with them. We're full of needs. We're very busy. And what happens is that we collect all these voices, we listen to the strongest ones, and from them we build me. The self is built from all the voices, and especially the dominant ones. And that's why the king, sitting in his castle that I talked about yesterday, is quite miserable. He has all the voices of all his subjects, his citizens, and they're all in him, and he's quite miserable sitting there with his cacophony. That's us. And we need support. These voices, they need support. So when we go out in the street, we always find proof that the voice is true. We can't allow the voices to be untrue, so we give them support. If we have a voice of anxiety, we will find in the street proof that I should be anxious. Look, I opened the Yediot Ahronot in the morning. See, I'm right to be anxious. I'm right to be worried. Look, Look what they're talking, look what the politicians are saying. Of course I'm going to be anxious. But we look for proof to support the voices that are there in us because it's uncomfortable to feel they may not be right. They are us. And sometimes these voices give us a lot of pain. The voices of patterns, psychological patterns, the voice of judgment, the voice of a victim, being a victim, the voice of being ashamed or guilty, would bring a lot of pain. But there's a interesting kind of one-line Buddhist teaching that says, where I put my attention, that's what I become. So whatever I put attention to, that becomes me. And that's an interesting point. In other words, we build ourselves through what it is that we pay attention to. And it's mostly unconscious, but we are constructing ourselves all the time. In brackets, anyone that thinks that the word rebirth has to, if you're going to be a good Buddhist, you have to believe in rebirth. Actually, what the tradition says more than that is if you want to be a good Buddhist, you have to see rebirth happening now. That's really what the teaching says. You have to see rebirth now. You're being reborn all the time as yourself because you're paying attention to those voices in us and those movements and those patterns that keep repeating and constructing ourselves again and again. So we are reborn in the next moment. I'm keeping on being reborn as another Stephen now. It's happening right now. And so are all of you. So we build the world according to all the influences and then we believe it to be real. We build ourselves according to the influences and then we believe it to be real. Someone said, politicians tell lies to newspapers, to journalists, and then they believe what they read in the newspapers. There is a lovely poem that I really enjoy from the tradition that says, sow a thought, zorea lizroa machshava, sow a thought and reap, kotzer, a word. Sow a word and reap an action. Sow an action and reap a habit. Sow a habit and reap a personality. Sow a personality and reap a fate, goral. It all starts with a thought. So we need to wake up to this entire process of how we are building ourselves and our world every moment and then believing it to be so and forgetting that it's built and that we build it. And for that, to actually see the construction happening, we need another way of looking. And that's why we're sitting here hour after hour. We're developing another way of looking, which is kind of looking directly at how we're constructing each moment. And peeling, the kalef, kitzat, peeling away the beliefs, the narratives, the stories, the tasritim, the peeling away and looking and seeing how each moment is made. What is my real experience right now? And it's not so important. Don't think that for this, to do this, you have to be the greatest meditator and do 20 retreats. It's enough to sit quietly and say, wait a minute, my mind is full of cacophonia. That's more true than just going out in the street and doing the cacophonia to other people. It's here we are sitting, seeing it. Sit and say, I can have two breaths, and then my mind takes over. Okay. Okay. That's the mind. We met. Boketo. We met it. Here it is. That's what it is. And that's how we live. So it's already just as, it's already a different way of seeing, different, tools that we use. It starts with the body, and the body is always the best place to begin because it's rather clean. It's actually easier to develop another way of looking. Like I was saying in the walking meditation today, we can never take a step in the future. If we are aware that we have a step, it's always got to be in the present. Our thoughts can be in the future, but walking can never be in the future. So the body can invite us to be in the present with a seeing that reveals what's really going on now, in our life right now. It's a different seeing from thinking about, from worrying about, from story about, from narrative in. It's a different seeing. It's a seeing that takes to pieces the story, the construction, the castle in which the king is prisoned. One of the places that, one of the things that we notice is that there is a whole drama going on around the issue of control. I can control, I cannot control, my thoughts control me, or do they? Can I change them? Are they in charge? Who's in charge here? Who's the boss around here? We feel it in the breath. Who's breathing? Is the breath breathing me? Am I breathing the breath? Can I stop it? No. Am I in charge of it? Well, yes. Where is the control? Control is an important issue because it's like we are being controlled and there we have suffering, but we're also in control because we can change things. So we are in a way a laboratory of Mabada when we look around issues like control. So it can be painful, a bit unpleasant to realize how much we are constructed, we are built by our habits, by influences, by other people, by the views of others, by the social identity, by our biography. It can be quite uncomfortable to feel that. But the seeing begins to free us from that construction. No, I have an example in my own life that I sometimes talk about. So those that have heard it 10 times, please forgive me. But in my past, I used to have very, very strong fear of talking like I am now in front of an audience. I used to I was a teacher in university and I just wanted to die. Every time I had to give a talk, I wanted to die. I wanted the world, the earth to open and swallow me up. It was such a nightmare. Terrifying to talk in front of people. And I would stand there in front of the audience and sweating and my heart beating like crazy and my tummy contracted and everything. But I'd already learnt a little bit of Vipassana practice from Goenka and Burmese teachers who were in the UK. So I used to practice. And I used to come to the class like 2 or 3 minutes before the students come in and stand there. And the classroom was like, the lecture hall was like, I was down and they were all up. And so I would see them coming in and I would like this. But I learned to practice with these experiences as phenomena. That means not carrying weight and importance, but just phenomena. Tofaot. So I chose a phenomena in the body, the tummy, and there was like the whole story of the fear was located in the tummy. And I would just be with the contraction, say, oh, it's just contraction of the stomach. That's the whole thing. It's just contraction. There's nothing more than that. Oh, it's not. Okay, I can be with it. It's there, and it goes, and it comes, and it goes, and it comes. That's it. And over a year or two, it vanished completely. And it vanished because it was like I was seeing it as it really was in real time, in the present, as a phenomenon. And not as a story that I have to believe in, that is true, that is always going to be there. It was just a phenomenon. The tummy contracted, reducing the whole picture into klum. This kind of seeing our patterns, seeing our difficulties, seeing our stories, reduces them. They can't hold the same power over us. When we look at the demons inside, they sort of slowly shrink. Oh. We give them power by believing in them. We give them power by our attention to them. We give them power by repeating again and again our stories. The minute we look straight at them, what happens? Kind of. They shrink. They go like when you press on the computer the button to minimize. Whoop! This huge program called My Issue. Whoop! It just goes into a minimal icon, and we put it in the corner of the screen. So we need to a little bit go behind the scenes, me'achorei ha'klaim, of our stories, of our cacophony in the mind, and see what's really happening. A fear is simply a pattern repeated in the body, in the hormones, in the memory, in the mind. It just arises, it's there, and it disappears. That's all it is. We don't need to give it authority over us. If we see it as it really is, it takes it to pieces. We see where it comes from, and it's nothing. We don't need to believe it anymore. But we have to see it clearly to not believe it. To see how it arises and disappears. Not so easy because we're always running on automatic. We're always believing our stories and running in our stories and sort of acting from our stories. So we need to stop, like in the retreat, and say, wait a minute. Do I have the power to see the story as it is? Yes. Can I sit with it for half an hour and see it as it arises and goes away? Yes. I've done the work. When I leave the retreat, one little bit of that story has gone, has lost its power. has lost its power over us. One little bit. But what makes it difficult for us is the habit. That we're running on automatic. We keep expressing the story. We keep believing it. I'm the victim. I'm doing this. It's always like that. Life is always like that. They're always doing it to me. It happens every time. That's who I am. That's belief. It's not reality. So that's our problem. That's why we need some concentration. That's why we need quiet. That's why we need sometimes a retreat or a meditation in the morning to be able to see clearly. It's like still water. When the water quietens down, we can see the mud under the pool. And we can also see there the jewels and the beauty. But we need a little quiet for that. Slowly, slowly, by turning towards our being as a phenomena, as a living being, slowly, slowly we turn the gaze towards ourselves and we can begin to take responsibility for who we are and to take responsibility for the cacophonia in the mind. And when we do that, we begin to understand that it's actually music. It's not cacophonia at all. It's music. But we need to hold it in our hand to be the conductor of the orchestra, to be the player, to be there with it, to be engaged with it, to see it, to turn towards it. And not just to act it in our life in an automatic way. And we suddenly realize we're not so helpless. We can be, in a way, the master of our thoughts, not the slave. Thoughts, for example, are a very bad master, they say, and a good servant. We can be master of our thoughts. They can be our servant, for example. This turning towards ourselves is actually quite a heroic thing to do. It isn't so easy, as you know yourself. The Buddha said, those that can do it express the roar of the lion. Shraga shall arye. Because it's empowering us it's taking us in our hands and finding our power by looking at the truth of who we are, and it's called the lion's roar. Because it's not so easy. And it's a little bit, it does need work, and we are sitting here working. And it needs investment. It needs paying attention. So, let's look a little closer at why does this seeing help us? How does it help us just to see? I read an article recently that says that said that one of the signs of psychological disturbance is what you call rumination. It means thinking about loops in the mind. And loops in the mind make the disturbance, and the disturbance make the loops in the mind. So it's a kind of vicious circle. And so we have to make sure we're not there. We're not doing that. That's sinking inside the story rather than being able to come out of it and look at it. But as long as, I would say, two movements in our meditation are our definitions of it working. One is if we can see phenomena as phenomena, we see what arises as phenomena. A thought is just a thought. A pain in the body is just a pain in the body. A fly on the nose is just a fly on the nose. Sounds from outside is just sounds from outside. Phenomena. So that's one place where we're out of the loop. And the other one is, however we can, to be a little bit disidentified, meaning pachot hizdahut im, a little bit stepping out, a little bit able to see things as if we're watching the movie of our life. We're watching our life. We are witnessing our life. So a little bit of the capacity to be a witness. That means we're on safe ground. That means we know what to do. That means it's working for us. So what makes the difference? Firstly, to realize that our struggle and difficulty dissatisfaction, dukkha, is created by conditions. Conditions create our experience. It's not entirely our fault. Because we have a body, we suffer. Because we're born into a body, we suffer. We want to continue. We have a need. We have a need to eat, to sleep, to be loved, to have, to survive. So it's a struggle. The struggle because we're born into a body, that's all. We didn't ask to be born into a body. We were thrown into a body. And whoever threw us there said, okay, now get on with it. And it's a struggle. The struggle to keep going. It's a struggle to survive. So pain and difficulty is in the nature of the lived experience. And so we can be a little bit less personal about it. It is the way things are, being a body, in a body. We shouldn't blame ourselves for our difficult thoughts, for our patterns, we shouldn't blame ourselves, our parents, our society. We don't need to go that way. It's just what happens. The conditions created this pattern or these thoughts or this cacophony or this discomfort or this dissatisfaction or this neediness. Conditions created. That's what it is. Right now, in the present moment, I am ready to turn to face what is. No, don't need to blame. That's another, starts being another story. You don't need to feel I'm specially suffering. It's not me. So that's already a help. And secondly, we realize that pain can be let go of. That it's not something that's stuck. Pain arises and leaves. We often add pain ourselves because we're in a habit, in a way of looking for difficulty. So if someone says to us, you're an idiot, you're stupid, I don't like you. What do we do with that? That stays the next day. We go to bed with it at night. We wake up in the morning with the same voice. We think, why do you say that? How do you say that? Maybe he's right. It ruined my day. And we're busy with it the next day and the next day, maybe the next week. In other words, something happened and we are repeating it and repeating it to ourselves. We keep going on around it. A poor little virus gives us a disease. And we are busy with it. And we are busy with it. And we go to doctors and we try and get better. It's fine to do all that, but we're so busy with it. We complain and we're miserable and it's the end of our life and we give everybody else a hard time. It's just a little virus that's just doing what it knows to do. A and look at the situation in the country. 100 years of conflict. The professors, the politicians, of course, all the experts, all the people on all sides, nobody can solve it. What's happened? Why? You'd think that after 100 years of suffering, someone can get up and stop this. We need another way of looking. And the way of looking is to see the way things arise, they give us pain, and then let them go. Let go the story, let go the busyness with the pain and the issues and the story and the narratives and the way it's stuck inside us. And we're on it, on the wheel. So we can let go once we see what's happening inside us. Someone once said, I used to think that I could have a wonderful life except for all the problems. Then I realized that all the problems are my life. That's where we start. Some clarity, when we turn towards our genuine experience, some clarity arises that everything has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It has a, what you call, sell-by date. You know what they stamp on products? This to be sold.
Tarikh tfuga.
Tarikh tfuga. This thought doesn't last forever. It's got tarikh tfuga. Zeu. It comes, it goes, finished. And the next one comes and goes, okay. The next one comes and goes, beseder, but it's finished. A feeling arises and it goes. An anger arises and it goes. A sense of story, who we are, arises and it goes. If we look carefully, we actually don't need to get rid of anything. We need to see very clearly that everything goes by itself anyway. Things get rid of themselves. But we don't notice usually because we string them together and they turn into my story or myself. But if we look carefully, they're not strung together. They are a fear that arises and disappears. There was a beautiful moment, one of the shortest one-to-one dialogues I had with somebody in a retreat. Some time ago, it was just one sentence. This person came to me and looked me in the eyes and said, I always felt that there's so much wrong with me. Now I know that there's absolutely nothing to be fixed. It was such a beautiful moment that this person cried and I also cried. It's just such a beautiful moment. There's nothing that needs to be fixed. Why? Because it goes by itself. We just need to see it closely, intimately. So, seeing the way we build our experience, seeing the way it comes and goes, seeing the way that pain arises through the nature of things and goes to and changes, seeing the way we are reborn, our experience is reborn every moment. Seeing the way our consciousness, our mind, our awareness touches and all the time confirms the world, touches the world and builds the world. Seeing the way that's happening through our own consciousness, we are building the world. We are building what we see. Even neurology will tell us this. The scientists who look at the mind know this. They also suffer, mind you. But they know this, that the mind is building the world, which we then believe in. Seeing the way we build the world all the time, again and again, according to the pattern, the tavnit of before. Seeing it and letting it go. Seeing that it's just happening. There isn't anything there that we have to worry about. It's just happening. The name of the Buddha gave to himself is Tathagata, meaning gone to there, to itself, gone to suchness, or gone to that, meaning from the belief in the world, of the construction of the world, just to that. That means it is. That's the way it is. It is. Kacha. So the Buddha called himself Halakhti le kacha. I went to that. I've gone to that. That's it. It's just happening. And that's so freeing. If we turn to ourselves and say, it's just happening. This moment is just what it is. It's just happening. There's no more. There's no less. It shouldn't be something else. I shouldn't construct anything out of it. I shouldn't complain that it's like that and it should be something else. It's happening. So we need tools to see this, and we are developing the tools. The tools are not only tools. It's not as if we need to kind of collect a Buddhist toolbox and carrying it with us like a carpenter everywhere we go, and sort of to pull out the hammer and pull out the screwdriver and build our this and that. It's not quite like that. We need tools of seeing, but we also just need to be. So there is a kind of delicate place between the two of them. So yes, we need a retreat, but at the same time, when we walk outside and feel the rain, which is quite a blessing. And okay, it's cold, but our body is responding to the cold. And there is a sky that's unusual and heavy. And there is food in the chadar ochel, in the kitchen, that the staff have made for us. And there's experiences of the moment which are nothing to do with tools. They're nothing to do with the method. They're to do with, in a way, itself. So there's always this dialogue between, yes, I have an intention to practice, but then there is itself. This moment of the rain on my face, on the umbrella. This moment of cold or warm or kindness or the body. I've mentioned wisdom. Awareness, what I've been talking about is wisdom. Wisdom that actually stops the construction process that we're stuck with. The habit of building ourselves and the world according to the old patterns. That's wisdom. I talked about mindfulness. I talked about concentration. These are actually three of five powers. And I'm just interested in this subject because I'm writing a book on the five powers right now. And one more that I think is worth mentioning right now, and that's the power of trust. Because if we're just there with the wisdom mind, it can be a little heartless. We can feel that we're a little bit in the analytic process of understanding our mind and our thoughts and working with our material and being in a mind world. And then there is the heart world. And the heart world also needs attention and needs kindness. And trust is a way of expressing this. It's a tool as well. Trust gives us support on the journey. If we see that something is helpful for us, we go for it. Trust is to say, I trust the path. This is helpful. I'm going to go there. I will stay with it. I trust that it will do its job. First, we have to be intelligent and say, yeah, it's good for me. But then, we just need trust. We let the path be wiser than us. We let the path take us. And sometimes it's quite difficult to know where to go, what to do, how to practice, etc. Many of these questions came up already today. But underneath all of that is, I trust the process. If I'm doing my job of sitting, walking, being aware as much as I can, I trust it will work. And trust is needed as one of the powers, along with wisdom and along with mindfulness, awareness, and steadiness. Trust can go into belief. We're not encouraging that. I don't want to convert anyone to be good Buddhists. I don't need more, but there's too much belief already. There's three religions in this country all killing each other. I don't want a fourth. We're not in that place. We don't need belief. We don't need to believe in the Buddha. We don't need to believe in the Buddhism. We don't need to go there. It's not necessary and it's not helpful. We don't need to believe so much even in outcomes, that if I do that, then I must get a result. The belief in the outcomes also gives us problems. But there's trust is much softer. It's much more quiet. It allows us to jump into the unknown. Because what we're doing here is jumping in a way out of the self that we know. We're looking beyond the habit of being me and looking and seeing, what is this me? So we need a leap of faith. In English you say a leap of faith, a jump. And trust helps us to do a jump into places that we don't yet know, into places that we're not sure about, into places where we might feel a little bit uncertain or even concerned, what's happening to me? But the trust is really a power that helps us to smooth the way into the unknown, into the beyond. Trust settles the mind, trust quietens, trust is a quality. I remember the word friar, and people here use the word friar as a kind of negative for someone that's weak, but the word friar comes from German. It means to free, to be free. So you can be a friar. It's all right. Trust. To be more important to trust, trust is understanding that the world isn't against us. Trust is a deep understanding. The world is not against us. The world may not be for us. It's also true. But we trust the world to be with us. And that's the real nature of trust. We don't need to trust that things will be better, because they may not. But we do need to trust that things will be what they are, just as they are. And that's okay. And that sweetens our life. So, the final sentence that we can live this way. This is not just about a retreat. This is about a way of life. A way of life in which we hold ourselves in our loving, aware hands, and we hold other people in our loving and aware hands. We live with simple awareness in the moment. It brings us a lot of joy, and it brings us a lot of insight. And slowly, slowly, the cacophonia in the mind turns into music. And more than that, we realize it's not our music. It's the universe that's playing us in a way. We are the kli, clay negina. We are the instrument. The music doesn't come from, we don't own it. The voices are talking through us that we listen to. The voice of our being is the same as all beings. So slowly, slowly, we through insight, through awareness, we listen to these voices, we purify them, and we begin to realize they're not just ours. It's the universe talking through us. And it's a great liberating insight. And it's the same voices of the rain and of the clouds and of the trees and of the sun and the moon and the stars, same voices. Thank you. So we'll just take one or two moments just of quietness.